to thank you all for coming. It's quite a crowd we have here today. And I know that the issue that we're discussing today is on everybody's mind. So we'll get right to it. Would everybody please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance? Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Our next President's Forum will be on February 12th. And I think a big round of applause should go to Vic's Painting. He's a new member, and he supplied all the goodies that you guys were eating this morning. Thank you, Vic. The program today, as you're all aware, is on foreclosures, and the issue is to where are we now? We're fortunate to have a very distinguished law firm speaking today, the law firm of Wien and Malcho, and Paul Wien and a few of his assistants are here today to help answer your questions and take this to the next level, hopefully. Any questions that you have, please fill out an index card, hold it up. One of the board members or myself will pick it up. Paul Wien is the managing shareholder of Wien and Malcho, a law firm established in 1995. He's native of Boston, Massachusetts. He is a frequent contributor to several different publications of interest to community association members and has lectured on the national, state, and local levels. He's also authored the law review article for Nova University Law Review on the developments in community association law. He's a member of CAI, which is the Central Community Association Institute. And he's also a member of Space Coast Communities Association. Paul Wien.
Thank you. Thank you, Roger. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. This is a great turnout. I'm glad to see you all. I do want to express apologies and regrets from my partner, Helena Malco, who couldn't be with us today. Her husband just came back from a year's vacation in Kuwait, Afghanistan, and Iraq. And they are off to Tennessee. He has a great desire to see some snow. So they're off as of last night, and I'm thrilled he's back, and I wish them nothing but the best. But I did bring with us today three attorneys, and you're going to be hearing primarily from them, and I'm pleased to have that happen. But I want to just make a couple of opening remarks and let you then go on. Now, we will have people answering questions here, and I think part of the good work that we do here is to take your specific questions. So please write them down, get them to those people, they'll get them up. We'll be reviewing them and we'll be answering them as we can fit them in, and toward the end we'll be taking pretty much exclusively questions. Every time that you're dealing with a collection matter in your association, whether it is a delinquency to the association, a delinquency to a lender, or both, you have to analyze each situation individually. The facts relating to each case will change the strategy to be used. That being said, and whoever your attorney is, you really need to consult with them initially as to the specific facts of every case. But that being said, there are a couple of general principles that I just want to articulate for you now, and I'm tailoring them to what I perceive as the current economic environment. Number one, don't wait. Don't delay. Act quickly when you have a delinquency. You are always going to be in a second position to some lender, and the only advantage that you have over that lender is speed. The lender is going to take a lot longer to complete the foreclosure. The lender is going to be more reticent to acquire property, and the lender is going to try to avoid having to pay you money if it can. You want to acquire that property. You want to make sure that it is not trashed when you acquire it, and there are ways to try to do that. And you then want to use that property for as long as you can as a money-making operation until such time as a lender can come in and take it over. The other thing that I want to stress is that you want to pursue and monitor and bird dog the lender. You may have heard that we've had some problems with foreclosure mills. Attorneys, imagine that, attorneys in Florida doing the wrong thing. In particular, there's a firm called David Stern. If you haven't heard about it, they used to have 1,200 employees. They have none now. And this is in the space of about 6 months. And so those foreclosures that were being handled by Mr. Stern's office are in a deep hold until they can be reassigned to other firms. So this only delays the lender in taking title and therefore gives the association an opportunity. So my message to you is there are opportunities here from which you can take advantage. Now, I'm going to turn to Erin McConnell. We have two Erins here, and in my firm, what we do is we refer to Erin McConnell as Erin M. We have Erin Zabel as Erin Z, although there is a difference in the spelling of Erin. I'm not good enough to distinguish the pronunciation between the Y and the I. And we also have Ian Lyland, who is actually came from one of those foreclosure firms, not David Stern's, but a reputable one. And so, yes, so he, Ian handled more complex foreclosures. So he's doing it from the lender's side. He's invaluable to us in terms of his knowledge of how they're acting. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to have Erin McConnell come up first, followed by Erin Zabel, and then Ian and I will look at the questions and we'll make appropriate comments, and then when everybody's done with their presentations, we'll just take an ideal focus on those questions. Erin McConnell graduated from the University of Nebraska, which I believe is in the state of Oz. She has written articles for them and worked in both immigration and child development issues. And she's been with us for 5 years. By the way, you'll notice that some of us up here have iPads. I will say that we, in September, celebrated our 15th anniversary as a firm. Anybody with us for more than 5 years got an iPad. You'll notice that I'm using a laptop. That's because my iPad is with my wife. Okay? So they have theirs. I don't have mine. But anyway, I hope you enjoy the presentation. Please give us your questions because we'll do our best to answer them, and I think you'll get a lot out of this. Thank you. Erin?
Good morning. Well, I'm going to talk primarily about the mortgage foreclosure process because a lot of the associations have been receiving numerous mortgage foreclosures, especially over the past 2 to 3 years. Now, I know that in the news recently, they keep saying that the mortgage foreclosures this year are going to echo the ones in the previous years. So far, I can say I have not seen that. But as Paul was mentioning with some of the problems with David Stern's office and other of mortgage foreclosure attorneys, that could be the reason that we're seeing the current delay. And so it may be just a matter of time before you start seeing your mortgage foreclosures pick back up again. Plus, keep in mind that any time the refinance bubble bursts, that when people have to start looking at how their mortgage rates have changed, then they again see delinquencies and problems paying their mortgages and keeping on time. And sometimes that goes right along with the payment of their assessments. Now, the good news is I am seeing more and more short sales. Short sales are excellent for the association. Not only do you get all of the assessments that are currently owed on the property, but that new owner at the closing is also responsible for paying any late fees or interest that have accrued against that property. So keep that in mind, because when you're getting calls from title companies telling you that there's statutory language that limits the amount that you can collect, they are not being accurate with you. Many of them don't understand exactly how the law applies. So you need to make sure that you consult your attorney before you turn in those estoppel forms, because any time that you are taking place in a short sale, then the association is able to recoup everything that the previous owner has not yet paid. So what I'm going to do is step through the mortgage foreclosure process. Some of you here are very familiar with the process and have seen it over and over. Others of you may be sort of familiar with what it looks like, but not exact on the details. So I'm just going to walk you through what a typical mortgage foreclosure process would look like, especially from your attorney's perspective. So first of all, when the association's registered agent is served with this document, it will have the summons listing the association as the named party. Be sure that your registered agent is familiar with looking at these summons pages before signing them off, because these process servers are very quick, so they want to come in, get you to sign, and be gone. Make sure that your association has the correct name. I know that many of you have different names, that it's not just Atlantic A for Condominium Association, that it may be Atlantic A of Brevard County. So make sure that it says exactly the name of your association. That's very important, because if the lender has not named your association correctly, then they are not serving you properly. So before you accept that document, make sure that it lists your association as exactly as you have it registered with the Florida Department of Corporations. Now, the summons packet will also have the Liz pendants attached. This is the document that gets recorded in the public records. This has the recording date on it and the date that basically the mortgage foreclosure case is starting out. Next comes the complaint. It's the actual body of the complaint. And attached to that is the mortgage along with an assignment if it's not being held by the current lender. When your attorney gets that information, I'm looking at the public records. I go and see to make sure that this is the first mortgage that's against the property, because if it's a second mortgage or if there is a prior mortgage that has not been satisfied or released, then the association has some additional defenses that I can add when I file your answer. Also, I'm looking to make sure that the name of that bank that's listed as the plaintiff on the mortgage foreclosure also is the owner of the note or the mortgage. I want to make sure that if they are not the person who wrote out the first mortgage as the first mortgagee, that there is an assignment that's been either recorded or somewhere has been executed saying that they are the rightful person to be able to bring this suit. Again, if they have not executed that proper assignment, which is happening more and more lately, then there could be title problems down the road. If you choose to forward this to your attorney, I know that often you want to avoid extra costs or you want to keep copies of that. What I would recommend is you, as an association, make copies of anything that you think is important to your records, but send the entire packet to the attorney. That way, we can take a look and see and make sure that there's all the information necessary in there that we need. If we get pieces, then sometimes it's more difficult for us to put those parts together if there's something missing, and then we have to contact you. Now, keep in mind, once the service is perfected on the association, once you accept that service, you have 20 days in which to file an answer. If you don't file an answer within that 20 days, then the plaintiff has the ability to enter a default judgment against you. This is a strict timeline. Again, it depends on how quickly the plaintiff is keeping track of these. But as I'm seeing these cases go to smaller firms rather than the big foreclosure mills, they're staying right on target with those deadlines. So it's very important once you get these documents to turn that over to your attorney as soon as possible. Now, often the associations ask whether it's necessary to file an answer. I know it costs money, and a lot of times you're trying to find the best way to avoid any unnecessary expenses. Again, talk with your attorney, because there's different things that you can look at. Certain cases, it may not be beneficial for the association in a cost matter to file an answer, but I have to say procedurally, it's always a good idea to file an answer. Filing an answer gives you an opportunity to be represented in that case, so that if at any time during the case the association needs to file a motion or file some sort of request with the court, that you are on record. If you have a default entered against you, then the court considers you to already be a party that's been removed from the case as far as being able to raise any defenses. The only way that you can move forward once a default has been answered is to either get some sort of stipulation agreement with the mortgagee to set aside the default, or you have to hold a hearing in front of the judge and explain to the judge why you think that you should be able to answer even after a default has been entered against you. Now, the plaintiff is largely controlling the time and speed of the case. What we see is during the course of the case, you'll have the judgment hearing date set. Often they'll file a motion for summary judgment, and then they file these supporting affidavits, such as the affidavit of indebtedness. Well, I'm sure if you have read the news or heard anything about these big foreclosure mills, what was happening is that they were taking stacks of affidavits and giving them to people who did not have firsthand knowledge of the case. These people were signing what they call robo-signing on all of these documents, attesting to the facts that were in them, even though they didn't have that personal knowledge. So now that these problems are coming to light and people are finding out that the person who signed that affidavit is not necessarily someone who had the ability to make that kind of statement, they're having to go back and redo all of those affidavits. That's why many of the cases that you've already seen that were filed in the last couple of years, if you've wondered why they've come to a complete standstill, it's likely due to a problem with the affidavits. I know that at least Bank of America, Chase, Countrywide, all of those have put a temporary hold on the progression of any cases because they're reviewing their entire affidavit process. And believe me, it's not something that they're going through quickly. In December, they were saying we're hoping to be done by January. Now in January, they're saying we're hoping to be done by February. But I had one honest attorney for one of the plaintiffs tell me that he has no idea that when I contact him next month, they may be looking to March or April. That as far as they have been told by their clients, there is no certain end in sight. Now, we know that they can't delay this process forever, but we also know that they certainly try. So once you get the documents and your attorney has filed the answer, they'll keep you updated about certain items, such as the judgment dates. If there is a delay in the process, now we have a new option for moving forward, and that's the case management conference. What our firm has adopted a policy that if we don't see any action in that case that's been filed on record for the last 30 to 60 days, we've been sending letters directly to the plaintiff's counsel and copying the association, and we tell the plaintiff that if they don't file any documents to move this case forward within the next 30 days or contact me and provide me with some sort of reason that they can't move forward, that we're going to request a case management conference from the court. It's been very successful so far. We've only been doing this for a few months, but I can tell you in those letters that I've sent out, the plaintiffs have been better at getting back to me than anything else that I've seen. And the other day I came up with an epiphany of why I think this is happening. And what happens with many of these mortgage foreclosures is that the plaintiff's attorneys are getting a flat rate from the bank to do a flat fee to do these foreclosures. Well, if we start adding case management conferences, then they have to have someone come and appear, and that's not a part of that flat fee. So it's going to cost them money. And that, for whatever reason, is making them go forward. I can't imagine. So now if we can get the bank to jumpstart at least that far, then if they are in a position to move forward, it seems as though they are moving forward. Now, if there's some other type of delay, such as loss mitigation with the owner, I don't know if many of you have heard about the HAMP program that the government initiated last year. It's the Home Affordable Mortgage Program. And what they do is the bank sits down with the borrower, and it's a series of calculations that who only knows how they operate. Normally, they have to be a homestead property, and then the owner, it's certain qualifications, such as if we modify this mortgage, would they still be able to afford it and the payments and everything. But what happens is that if the owner is involved in these HAMP negotiations, that pauses the mortgage foreclosure action. Because until they determine whether the owner qualifies, the bank is hesitant to move forward. Now, the same thing goes, let's say if they qualify for these HAMP programs and they start making payments, there is no trigger to the outside world that this is happening. I don't get any notification as the attorney that says this owner qualified for HAMP and we're now in a stipulation for repayments. Instead, it just looks as though the case is dormant. So that's why when we contact them, we're trying to get as much information as we can, because on these modifications, I'm not going to find them when I do a search of the public records. And at the same time, the mortgagee is not going to automatically dismiss the case because they don't know yet if this owner who was delinquent is going to become delinquent again, even under the new plan. So as you can see, each complication makes the cogs turn a little bit slower. But it's difficult when we're looking from the association's perspective to understand why these things are going on. Now, each county's case management operation is going to be a little bit different. I know that in Seminole County, they have an actual procedure that's laid out that's on their website. Now, from Seminole County's perspective, they're requiring a 120-day lapse in any filings in the mortgage foreclosure. Also, they're requiring that the borrower show up at these case management conferences, which we know it's difficult if a borrower is trying to avoid payment to get them to cooperate and come to some of these hearings. Many times it's because they don't understand what's going to be required of them when they go. Other times it's because they simply know that they can't pay. What we're hoping is that at these case management conferences, that the judge will take into consideration all of the issues that are going on with this property. Now, each one is going to be different because it's going to depend on who shows up at the case management conference that day, what they tell the judge, and it's up to the judge's discretion on how he or she is going to deal with those matters. Some may set deadlines for the final judgment and discovery. Some may set it to trial if they believe that there are no further issues of fact. And others, if the certain parties don't appear, such as the plaintiff or such as the borrower, they may do nothing. So it's really, it's one of those times where we don't know exactly what to expect because each judge operates their own courtroom differently and each will handle these case management conferences in their own way. Now, this case is likely going to last at least 12 to 18 months. Previously, we would say 6 to 8 months, but I would say use the utmost caution in making your budgets and taking a look at delinquencies. And if someone is currently in a mortgage foreclosure, it's very likely that it will take at least 12 months to resolve. Some of them will go more quickly if they're able to get default judgments against the owners or if the owners have quickly agreed that they can't pay, but others may take a longer time. Now, let me see. If we're trying to proceed with the case management conferences, our ultimate goal is to get some sort of response to get this back moving again. Now, this may mean mediation between the owner and the bank. Often, the associations will ask if it's beneficial for them to attend the mediation. And I would say talk to your attorney depending on the specific case, but likely at the mediation, it's going to be about that HAMP program qualification that I spoke of. It's going to be a representative of the bank who has settlement authority and the owner, and they're going to try to determine if there's some sort of payment plan that the owner can qualify for that would move the case out of the mortgage foreclosure. Now, When the association has a circumstance come up where they know that one of their owners is involved in mortgage foreclosure, but you have not received any type of Liz Pendens or service of summons notification, contact your attorney and ask them to search for that owner to determine if there is a lingering mortgage foreclosure out there in which the association is not named. Because we have seen this happen. It doesn't happen as much now as it used to, but there are still certain circumstances where if you are especially a master association or if you are a condominium that falls under a master association, it's possible that when the bank did its title search that it may or may not have seen that you should also be included as having an interest against that property. If the association is not named as a defendant in the matter, it changes the amount that you will be able to collect from that bank if it goes through to title. Right now, if the association is named, and both 718 and 720 require the lender to name the association as a defendant, if the association is named, then you get the lesser amount of up to 12 months of unpaid assessments, or 1% of the original mortgage amount, and that falls for both condos and homeowners associations. However, if you are not named, then they're not foreclosing your interest. Your interest still exists, so you are able to collect all assessments from any owner who takes title to that property after the mortgage foreclosure. So again, that's why we urge you to contact your attorney, because if you've heard that someone has gone into foreclosure but you haven't received any proof of that, it's important to do the research and determine if it's going to affect the way the association will be able to collect assessments from the new owner. After 10 months, if there has been no activity on these cases, the association also has the ability to file a notice of lack of prosecution. Now, I know 10 months is a very long time, but like I said, if this owner has been involved with a repayment plan with the bank, then it's possible that the bank has allowed this case to linger without filing anything further and without dismissing it. When you contact the bank's attorney, they'll tell you that it's on hold, and they don't specify necessarily what that hold is, or they may not even know from their lender. Some of them will have amnesty holds where they have a moratorium across the board that they're not moving forward. Again, right now, many of it is based on the affidavit process review, or they may be in a loss mitigation hold. But at any rate, if they haven't filed any documents within 10 months, you can file the notice of lack of prosecution. It gives them 60 days in which to file something with the court, or else the court or any interested party can file a motion to dismiss the case. This is good because it gets them off the dockets, and so that's why the judges are happy to go ahead and enter those orders. But if the plaintiff files any piece of paperwork, whether it is a status of the case or whether it's an affidavit, many times the judges will let that case remain open and pending and will tell the plaintiff either some of them will give them deadlines of moving forward, and others will just say that they're denying the motion to dismiss and allowing the case to remain open. Now, the important dates in every case are the hearing date, the sale date, and the date of the certificate of title. Now, the judgment hearing date, again, your attorney will let you know when those judgment hearings are coming up. Usually, this is a hearing on the motion for summary judgment. In a mortgage foreclosure, there are not many issues that have to be disputed unless the owner has raised issues of title issues or some sort of truth in lending issues where they allege that the mortgagee was not straightforward in how the borrowing process was going to work. But otherwise, if there are no issues in the case, then the judge, it's a matter of looking to see have they paid. If they haven't, then they are allowed to move forward to a final judgment. At that judgment hearing, the judge will schedule the sale Normally, it's 30 days out. If an owner attends that judgment hearing, then the judges usually take that into consideration and will give them 60 to 90 days. The maximum I've ever seen is 120 days for them to give the owner time, either if there's a pending sale or something of that nature that they're trying to determine if they can work out something with the borrower or with the mortgagee. If a mortgage foreclosure is dismissed at any time during this process, then the case itself is closed and put away. But I caution you, don't forget about it. You want to make sure that your attorney is aware of the dismissal and that they go back and look at when that last delinquency date was for the owner. Because it's possible that the bank may have dismissed this case just because it doesn't want to take the property. So if they are dismissing it simply to delay taking the property, maybe the property is in poor condition and they don't believe it's going to be profitable for them, then you want to make sure that you have on record somewhere that last payment that the owner made, and that's contained in the body of the complaint. If you keep track of that date, the statute of limitations requires the bank to have an active mortgage foreclosure at least within 5 years of that last delinquency date. I know 5 years sounds like a very long time, but if you think about some of these cases where if it was maybe a 2008 case and it got delayed and delayed and delayed, and now the bank's looking at the property going, oh my goodness, this property has been vacant now for 2 years. It's in horrible condition. We don't want it. So now they have only 2 years from now that they need to have some sort of active mortgage foreclosure against it, or else, just like how your liens expire, their ability to bring a mortgage foreclosure suit expires. That statute of limitations expires, and now the association, there is no reconciled mortgage there that can be foreclosed. So that's an important date to keep in mind. I know 5 years seems like a very long time, but it may be helpful for you in the long run. And again, it's just one simple step that you can take that may make the difference. Also, if you have a dismissal, keep in mind that now you are free and clear to go against the owner and start your collection action. Don't let there be another delay. If you can move forward on your process of foreclosing, like Paul was talking about, you can turn it into a profitable venture for the association. You can rent out the property until the mortgage foreclosure is complete. Beware, though, that there are some cases where if there was some sort of legal deficiency in the case, that it may be reopened once that legal deficiency has been cured. I've seen this happen in some cases where it will believe that the case has been dismissed and will move forward, only to find out that the bank within 30 days has filed something. Especially this happens when the owner files a motion to dismiss for maybe improper process or something like that. The bank can fix those errors, and then the court will allow them to reopen the case. Now, when we get to the part where the final judgment has been entered and the court has entered the sale, here is another opportunity where many of the banks stop. Again, maybe it's due to the affidavit issue, or maybe it's due to the condition of the property, and the bank is starting to look and realize that this is not profitable for them. Due to a recent case, I don't know if many of you have heard, but in December of this past year, the 5th DCA entered a ruling in the Little House case saying that the bank is not the only party who can reset the foreclosure sale. This is a new development, because previously the bank had all the control with the timeline. Now, with this 5th DCA decision, any interested party, especially associations, can file this motion to reset the sale. What happens is that you have to file the motion with the court, you have to attend the hearing with your prepared order asking the court to reset the sale date in this matter, show them proof that the final judgment was entered, which is very easy because it's always recorded in the public record. But then the tricky part comes in that when you get the sale set, Now it's up to the association to publicize that sale. So you're going to have publication costs that have to be 2 weeks prior to the sale. You'll also have to attend the sale to ensure that it takes place. And if the bank files any sort of motion in the interim asking the court to cancel the sale, then you'll want your attorney to attend that hearing and show the judge that there is no reason, unless they have some viable reason, to cancel this sale. You need to have someone there who is protecting this sale so that it will continue to be carried on. It is a costly process based on what you're currently paying for your mortgage foreclosure defense. This adds a whole new dimension to that process. But if you are looking at something that has been lingering and where the delay has happened between the judgment and the sale, this is your opportunity to take a look at that, see if the cost-benefit analysis favors the association, and if so, move forward and get that sale taken place so that that way you have a new owner in that unit and you have someone to collect the current assessments from. Now, finally, when the certificate of sale is issued, it may be issued to the plaintiff for a nominal amount, or it may go to a third-party purchaser. Keep in mind that if the certificate of sale goes to the plaintiff, that there is a possibility that that plaintiff will assign that bid to a third party. This is important because often what we'll see is that the banks will purchase at the sale, they'll have the certificate of sale, and then you get a call from a title company saying the bank has someone already lined up on this, they want to get the property sold as soon as possible, give us the amount, it's 12 months or 1%. And they do it about that quickly. And you're caught up in it and you give them the amounts and then you pause. And I would say contact your attorney before you send that document in, because the bank can't sell anything until they have a recorded certificate of title, which is different than the certificate of sale. The certificate of sale happened on that day at the sale. The clerk issued that saying who purchased the property. Now there's a 10-day hold between the certificate of sale and the issuance of the certificate of title. During that 10 days, if there was some sort of abnormality or problem with either the sale or if the owner filed bankruptcy just before the sale, any type of issue like that, then that will be brought and it'll prevent the certificate of title from being issued. So you don't want to provide any payoff figures until that certificate of title is issued, because it may be that U.S. Bank was the mortgagee in the matter. They foreclosed. The certificate of sale says U.S. Bank right on the front, but then they had an assignment of bid to Fannie Mae. So when I get the certificate of title and I see Fannie Mae, I go, wait a minute, this is a third party. There is a case, it's the Bay Holdings case, saying that an assignment of bid is not the same thing as assigning the mortgage. So unless they can show me assignment of mortgage that happened prior to the certificate of sale, then it's not the same as the first mortgagee taking the property. Therefore, under the statute, it is a third-party purchaser, and you get all of the assessments. So again, there's a big difference, and they'll try to convince you that these assignment of bids are the same thing as the next party having the same title. All right. Bay Holdings is the name of the case. It was... Bay Holdings versus 2000 Island Boulevard Condo Association. So yes, that says that the assignment of bid different from an assignment of mortgage. All right. So when you get the certificate of title, now the association is off and running, because not only do you have a new owner in that unit, but you have someone who is automatically responsible for money to the association. Once that person takes title and the certificate of title is recorded, If the owner is the first mortgagee, they automatically owe you the lesser amount, as we talked about, of the up to 12 months of assessments, or 1% of the original mortgage. If it is a third party, they owe you all assessments. Now, you still have to remove the interest, late fees, any administrative fees, and any attorney's fees that were used prior to that, including mortgage foreclosure defense. You can't collect any of those from that new owner. But going forward, if you turn this over to your attorney automatically, you will be able to collect those attorney's fees for the collection used in that process. So once you turn it over to them, if your attorney sends, if your condo association, the 30-day letter, intent to lien, saying that the bank has 30 days in which to remit full payment of the amounts owed, or the association can proceed with a lien, filing a lien, then sending the 30-day intent to foreclose lien letter, and then filing your lien foreclosure action. Now, if this is the first mortgage, you are now the first priority holder of an interest against that property. There is no one above you. That's why we highly encourage you to move quickly on these. Do not let these banks delay, because many of them, again, the title company will call you, oh, we don't have a sale lined up yet, so we don't have to pay. I've actually had a title company call me and say, well, fine, if you won't let us take these amounts, then we just won't pay you. Okay, that's fine, because we can foreclose on the property. We can take the property back, and we can sell it with clear title. We have that ability. So now the association is the one who is in the position of power over the bank, because there are no other encumbrances ahead of you. So I think that covers all of the existing issues. Oh, here's some questions. We'll go ahead and answer those. How should an association handle a short sale when the parties threaten to scuttle the sale if the association doesn't agree to accept less than what is due? So in this short sale situation, if you're taking a look, again, consult your attorney, because this is one of those times where you can do a cost-benefit analysis, looking at how much is owed on the property, looking at what you would calculate the 12 months or 1% amount to be, and taking a look at how close this property is to going through to the certificate of title. Now, obviously, if you're in the early stages of the mortgage foreclosure, then it may be more of a benefit to you to take a look and see if there is any reduction that you can take. Keep in mind, though, that your best areas of reduction would be with late fees, interest, attorney's fees or costs, because those types of items would be things. Now, as with the attorney's fees, you've already spent those, but I would say with the late fees and interest, those are gravy on top of what you're being able to collect outside of the assessments. So if you can remove those, if only if necessary, if that's going to kill the deal, then that may be a good step to take to see if that's going to be profitable for the association. Your goal is to get a paying person in the unit. Ultimately, that's what we all want. We want that account to be brought as whole as possible, but we want someone who's going to be in there as soon as possible to start paying so that it doesn't become delinquent again. Okay, the next question is, summarize what procedural benefits are lost if the association doesn't bother to answer the complaint. That's a good question. So when the association takes a look, and I know that many of you will look and say, well, the person is current right now. We were served with the mortgage foreclosure today. They've been keeping up with all of their payments. We don't see that there's going to be an issue. If you know that this person is going to continue to be current, then that's one thing. But if there are indications that the delinquency in the mortgage payments are also going to lead in a delinquency in assessments, then it's important that you take the action for the association to be represented in the case. Certain things that are protected when you file an answer is your ability to request a case management conference, your ability to contact the plaintiff's attorney directly and tell them that you are going to file these actions, the ability to file a motion to reset the foreclosure sale. those opportunities are lost if the association has not filed an answer. And I would say there's nothing more disturbing as an attorney than to have someone send me a pleading with no instructions as to what to do with it. And I look in my records and I see we haven't filed an answer. We weren't monitoring this or having any analysis prior to this pleading. And now I have a pleading with no way of telling you how you can move forward. So when you consider those actions and how to best protect the association's interests, filing an answer and having representation in the case gives you the best opportunity to be heard within the case and to be able to file proactive motions. If you don't have that, if a default is entered against the association, then like I said, you have to backtrack not only in finding out what's going on. I know that there are certain counties where you can look up the actual pleadings on the online, but there's other counties that they have no way of looking at pleadings that have been filed in the case other than having me drive to the courthouse and take a look at that case file. So by having the association be represented in the case, then your attorney will get all of the pleadings that are filed in the case, or even better, they'll be able to have the power that if they haven't gotten those pleadings, to request the judge to make the other party provide those pleadings. Now, the final question is, if a foreclosure is dismissed or settled, can the association recover its attorney's fees and costs of defending the mortgage foreclosure action? Now, the statute is specific in that it says that only the attorney's fees used in the collection of assessments can be included. There are different firms that have taken different positions, but our position is that this is litigation. So this is mortgage foreclosure defense. You are defending your interests in the mortgage foreclosure action. So therefore, it is not used in coordination with your collections, which makes it not a collectible fee from any individual party, not from the owner and not from the bank or future owner afterwards. So unfortunately, this is a cost of doing business. But again, if you look at the cost-benefit analysis, there are several advantages to taking these steps and places where you'll empower the association rather than having to remain in the background just waiting for everything to be completed. All right. Well, if you have any questions, again, we'll cover some more of those at the end. But that's the basics of the mortgage foreclosure process. So I hope you have a better understanding of what that is now. And I'll turn it back over to Paul.
Thank you, Erin. We're getting some really good questions here. I will just say, Beverly, count the ballot. Okay, of course, I always get a question that has nothing to do with anything. Count the ballot. If somebody writes their name on the inner envelope, that's not a basis for disqualifying it, okay? So count that ballot. With regard to some of the questions I've got, let me just touch on a couple. I've taken the ones that are a little bit on the periphery. One question I've gotten is about FHA approval. And the question is, how vital is it for the association to have FHA approval in the current economic situation? And do FHA loans mean lower income residents? Well, the second question is, it's possible, yes. They're intended to be assistance programs. If you have a FHA-approved project, then essentially you've opened your market up to a larger number of potential buyers. Is it crucial in this environment to have it? The answer is no, it is not crucial. And in fact, although FHA has been changing its rules, there are some instances where your documents may directly conflict with FHA requirements and therefore prevent you from getting FHA certification unless you change your documents. So I don't know that it's particularly essential. It may well mean a lower income status, but if you get approval and it doesn't require changing your documents, then you have a wider market of potential buyers. Would I comment on the funding company, LM Funding? And it goes on to say, where communities may receive all back due assessments while they complete the correct collections process. I would quarrel with the characterization of that's what happens under an LM funding contract. LM funding is one of several organizations that will give you some money in return for an assignment of the debt owed to the association by an owner. Generally, they will not give you, as this says, all of the back due assessments. They will give you the lesser of 1% or 12 months, and they will in turn take an assignment of the claim and then attempt to collect it. If there are some instances under their contract where you become obligated to them for their costs and fees, including when the owner files bankruptcy. I don't generally recommend doing that. I'm not particularly in favor of the L&M scenario or their system for doing business. So I generally do not recommend them to my clients. Question, what do you do with an abandoned condo when there's no way to reach the owner? The answer is what we said, foreclose. You have an ability to foreclose on that unit right away. If you can't find the owner, you have an ability to make service by publication. Get ownership of the property. What we're trying to tell you is don't just sit on your hands. Aaron has given you some very good scenarios where you may get paid in a short sale in full, where somebody who may wind up being a third-party buyer at a mortgage foreclosure and you get paid in full, where things are delayed and you may wind up getting rid of the first mortgage completely, either through a statute of limitations issue or because someone else has screwed up the mortgage process. So you may wind up being the first lien holder. Don't sit on your hands. That's what's necessary here is proactivity. So if you have an abandoned unit, don't just let it sit there. Go out and start your own lien foreclosure and lien and foreclose on that unit, if necessary, making service by publication. Finally, is it an attorney's responsibility to inform condo boards of their various opportunities for the board to act? The answer is yes. If I'm asked a question, it's my responsibility to answer it. But I can't advise you unless I'm asked a question. So if the board asks the question, what are our opportunities in this given situation, the attorney should say, okay, let's discuss the facts. What's the unit worth? What liens are on it? How long has the owner been there? What condition is it in? What's the status of any litigation? Do you know if the owner lives locally? Is it owner-occupied, rented? All those things. And then based on that information, the factually intensive information, you should get answers. Okay? But it's not an attorney's job to be a mind reader and say, I got a card here. I think you have units that are behind. Let me guess what their circumstances are. You have to ask the question first.
And tell us when the unit is sold.
Yes, because then we can tell you whether you're entitled to full payment or not, or whether you're entitled to partial payment. And then after that, who's responsible for paying you in full thereafter on new assessments? I'm sorry?
And we'll stop
a mortgage foreclosure defense. If you haven't been in the case and you find out it's been sold, we need to know that. All right. The next person I want to bring up is Erin Zabel, who is a graduate of Stetson University, both undergrad and graduate. And not only did she get her JD, but she has an MBA from Stetson as well. I will also tell you that you're all invited in about 25 years when her adorable son, Cole, gets to marry my adorable niece, Nina. So this is Erin Zabel.
Okay. Today's theme is definitely do not wait. I'm going to echo Aaron and Paul's comments. That's our push. Do not wait on these collections. This is something that the association gets to take a proactive position. You're defending the mortgage foreclosure, but you're taking the proactive turn and going after these owners that are not paying you, especially the banks. That's first and foremost. The only owners that we can say always pay, I've never had one that doesn't pay at some point or another even in the lien foreclosure process, is the banks. That's your best bet for getting your money back. They don't want to lose these. They've actually titled the association's liens super liens because they know we can take their property that they've worked so hard to get through the mortgage foreclosure, back from them. One of the specific questions, I'm going to try to interject the questions that I received into my little lecture. One of the specific questions was about the bank taking title to a mortgage foreclosure, then transferring it to a second bank, and then asking what that bank then owes. The amount owed is established at the time of certificate of title to whatever the first bank took. That's what the second bank's position, they inherit that position, that amount of assessments, or 1% of the original mortgage amount. They also asked the question about what happens after the 30 days. We read the statutes as 30 days is the amount of time that the association can place a lien on the property, not the expiration of their limitation to the 12 months, 1%. I know some of the collections agencies and a few attorneys' offices are reading it differently. We have no proof to the otherwise and continue on the path that that amount is established at the certificate of title and continues to that amount. As for pursuing collections quickly towards just general owners, not banks taking title, the owner is more likely to pay when the delinquent amount is less. If they have $100, they're much more likely to pay it than when it's $1,500, $1,000. Most of us keep rainy day money just in case. You forgot your assessments are delinquent. Well, now you have a chance to pay those and get it cleared up. When we start waiting and waiting and building these and building attorney's fees, that's the properties that tend to never get taken care of. They go all the way through because the owners don't have the money or the ability to make some sort of payment plan that's reasonable to go through with the redemption of their property. The association doesn't benefit by waiting. Basically, you're giving them time, and you're not getting anything. You're just sitting holding a ledger that continually accrues monthly or quarterly, however you collect your assessments, but you're not gaining anything by that. There are going to be special circumstances, and like we've established before, everything needs to be taken on a case-by-case basis. There's going to be that person that just lost their spouse or some other horrible traumatic accident or something that has caused their finances to go awry. That's a distinct case, and it needs to be taken on a case-by-case basis in proceeding. But when you proceed, the association needs to get a game plan, which is what we really advocate, is setting out your delinquency. Your documents lay out usually a period of which the assessment will become delinquent, whether it's immediately 5 days, 10 days, 30 days. During that period of time, you can certainly send out a notice saying, hey, we haven't received your payment. Just a friendly notice. No charge, just postage, send it out, form letter. You know, you haven't paid this. We're just letting you know. Some people forget. But as soon as that period, your 10 days, 30 days hits, that's when you need to get that intent to lien letter out. If you get that out, there's only a certain amount of small fees incurred. Once again, they're more likely to pay when it's the small fees rather than lumped and lumped and lumped. There's no reason at this point to wait. In the past, I know we've hesitated when there's mortgage foreclosures, but considering the length of time that mortgage foreclosures are taking, we're taking a more proactive approach and trying to get the association in a position to proceed, because this is the only part that you can truly control in the collections process. You get to control this. You don't get to control as much on the mortgage foreclosure. The second thing that I'd like to emphasize is once that intent to lien expires, whether it's 30 days for your condo or 45 for the HOA, then it's time to get your lien in place. Keep in mind that these liens do have expiration dates. I know generally we're very familiar, most of the people in this room are familiar with your condo is going to last 1 year from the date of that recording. So you need to keep on top of these. If you're not going to proceed forward, it's not a good idea to place that lien because it's going to give you a date certain and you'll lose the face of that lien, the amount of assessments on the face of that lien should we hit that 1 year and 1 day. You're done. So keep that in mind. But in our game plan, we like to see the associations move. Like I said, this is your proactive chance to take the control of the collections process. And then once you get that lien signed, get your intent to foreclose out. That doesn't mean that you have to start that lien foreclosure instantly, but we'd like to see it, especially in banks. Like I said, the banks pay. It's just a question of when they're going to pay. We don't want to leave the association high and dry when you have the banks seeing record profits every single year. Even though there's half of Florida seems to be in mortgage foreclosure, the banks are still profiting. They have the ability to pay these. They just sometimes hesitate, especially waiting for the sale that's going to be coming. They'll pull estoppels asking for a sale that's coming, but they don't want to pay the association until they get paid. That's their goal. We can take that process into our own hands and control when they pay and how much they pay. They're going to be obligated, just like any other owner, to every bit of the interest, late fees, collection costs, attorney's fees that you incur during the collections of this. They're obligated to all of that. And it pays to pursue those, to at least keep the bleeding down when there's several delinquent owners out there. And you always want to be in the position to move forward should you choose to do so. And like I said, if you lay out a game plan of these are the amounts of when we move forward with the intent to lien, these are the amounts when we move forward, so on and so forth, as the delinquency, it takes some of the guessing out of it. You don't have to go over individually. Of course, like I said, there's individual cases, but you want a way to proceed so that you can just automatically make those decisions and make the process more streamlined. The goal here is to make the association as solid as possible financially, and especially moving against the banks, you don't want to delay. See some of the other questions. I'll wait on that one. One of the questions is, what is the status of the association liens at each stage of the lengthy process? I'm not sure if this was referred to the mortgage foreclosure or the collections. In the mortgage foreclosure, it's just part of the mortgage foreclosure. They probably named the lien. It basically doesn't really affect the association lien until they get that certificate of title, wiping it out. On our side, the collections side, the lien is going to remain in place until it expires. Until you file that lien foreclosure, the lien is just out in the world on notice for everybody to know that owner is delinquent. But it doesn't really put the association in any better position until you actually get that lien foreclosure filed. It's not protecting anything any more than those amounts are already secured to the property. It's your tool to move forward. Another thing to consider while you're proceeding with your collections is suspension rights. This is something that an invaluable tool can be, a very invaluable tool to the associations, especially if you have desirable amenities in the association or gated access with alternate access if you have a guard gate or alternate access with a remote. We've seen a lot of situations with renters and individuals using the property that will come in and try to pay to gain these rights back. There are specifics on each statute. The owner must be 90 days delinquent before you're going to proceed with the suspensions rights. There's 14-day notices, and homeowners associations also require a hearing. But it can be a very powerful tool that the association shouldn't forget and can throw into your game plan as well. Like I said, when you're laying out your collections process, these are all tools that need to be laid out in your arsenal to go forward. Another new tool for the association is being able to demand rent from the tenants before the lien foreclosure has started. This demand has to be made on current assessments that are due. This can't be applied to delinquent assessments. It's only going to be the current assessments, so it's not a save-all. It is something, though, that the association can demand these amounts that are current. On leases, there's a couple of little niches in that you want to make sure that you examine as well, whether the lease was entered prior to July 1st, 2010, is something you want to look into, and you may want to discuss with your attorney the specifics of each one if you know when the tenancy began. Like I said, any rents collected can only be applied towards the current assessments that are due, and those are the only ones you can demand as well. It is an ongoing demand, though, during the delinquency. If the rent is significantly more, or any more, actually, than the current assessments due, any of that extra rent tendered to the association needs to be returned to the owner. It cannot be collected by the association nor applied to anything else, only the current assessments that are due now. You can't apply to the future assessments that are due. Unfortunately, the statute didn't go that far, nor did it go far enough to say that you could apply those rents to the delinquency. During this time, you're actively pursuing the debtor. Then we're coming up with a lien foreclosure. It's time to file. This is the time that you need to watch and listen and be nosy. Nobody likes a nosy neighbor, but in this case, it's important. We want to beware the junk properties. Most of us know in our neighborhoods and our associations which properties are utterly torn apart. You have a good idea. Those are the ones that the association has to know going in what it would take to rebuild or make rentable should they take title. Always in the back of your mind, we could take title to this unit. What would it take to make this a rentable property? Not a slum property. It has to be a rentable property. That it doesn't have to be a mansion, but we need it to be nice. You need to know who's in the unit. This is what the nosy part as well. Is it the owner still? Because owners like to stay in their property. They generally don't like to be kicked out, even when they know there's a mortgage foreclosure coming. Sometimes that the lien foreclosure, they'll pay off just to stay in the process. Because we can, like Aaron mentioned, we go much quicker than the mortgage foreclosure. We're looking at timetables that are more like 6 months to a year rather than a year to who knows how long on the mortgage foreclosures. And sometimes it's worth paying off the assessments due or working out some sort of viable payment plan during that time to stay in the property. There's very few defenses to a lien foreclosure, so they don't have the time that they do in a mortgage foreclosure to stay in the property. Same thing with tenants. If there are tenants in the property, and even if you did the demand for rent prior, asking for the current assessments, if there are tenants in the property and we have a lien foreclosure, we can pursue them and ask for the rents to be applied to delinquent assessments. All the rent gets applied back, and the judge actually orders that. We feel it's a much better tool than the newer demand for rent outside of the lien foreclosure because it allows the association to apply all those rents received to the delinquent assessments. In theory, if the renter stayed and there was a decent amount of rent, that could pay off the amount due to the association. It does happen. I'll say it doesn't happen all that much, but it does happen where the rent is enough to cover that. Another thing to consider is be informed the entire time. Let your attorney know. Like we said, we're not mind readers. We're not that good yet. But let them know who's in the unit at any given time. If you see moving trucks, let us know. Give us a call. Give whoever your attorney is a call and let them know what's happening with the property. Too much information for us is better than not enough. I like to know if there's renters and I'm going in to tell the judge that I need an order saying pay the rent. If the renters move out, it doesn't help anybody. And then there's additional attorney's fees that you're going to have to pay. But if you let us know, we can stop that before it gets to that point. Like I said, during the lien foreclosure, make sure that those renters we're notified of the renters and that we're actively pursuing those rents for the association. Towards the end of the lien foreclosure, if people are moving in, we're less likely to do it then because you're closer to the sale, you're closer to obtaining title to the property. And hopefully those renters are good renters and you want to keep them in the property, and that's automatic income for the association. If you have a renter in the property, there's no time, no turnaround. They want to stay, they just start tendering rent to the association. And it can be a quick way to start generating that income that was lost previously to the delinquencies and the costs and the fees that have been accruing since the first owner stopped paying. And that brings me to the next point. Take title to the property. Go to the sale. Finish with the sale. We have a lot of associations that sometimes stop at the final judgment. That's fine if the mortgage foreclosure is right at the very end of the mortgage foreclosure. We'd rather you hold than not take title prior to the bank taking title if it's very close. However, if you have the chance to rent it, take it. It's worth it. If the property can be rented within a reasonable amount of time without a horrific amount of investment into it, you think you can make it back, rent. Rent as long as possible as you can because this is your opportunity for making that money back. It's more difficult. The work for the association has become more difficult because of the mortgage foreclosures. We ask more of you because of it, but it makes a difference, and it's the chance for the association to make that money back. Another thing to rent, we encourage renting even if there's a short sale on the horizon. If the association owns the property, there's always the possibility that you can sell the property. You sell the property subject to that first mortgage, if there is one. There sometimes isn't. But if you sell it, you're thinking about selling it, we still encourage you to rent, because typically to get that approval for that short sale takes a long time. And that's just more opportunity for the association to cut some of those losses. That's also another thing to consider when you take title to that unit: get insurance. Speak to your insurance agent immediately. Get that property insured. And that part, that insurance, the cost of that insurance is also going to be added back into the cost and fees and assessments that have been incurred already on that property. And then any rent that you collect will be added back in that to wipe that amount out. Having title to the unit also puts you in a unique position in the mortgage foreclosure. If ultimately you want the bank to take title, you're in a different position once you take title. You become the owner, which is a much different position in the court system. It's a much different position to the banks and the bank's attorneys when you're actually the owner of the bank. And it puts you in a different position for negotiating them to move forward on the mortgage foreclosure. So sometimes desperate times call for desperate measures. And the association may want to take title simply for that. We don't generally encourage it. We want you to make money off of it, and we want you to rent the property. But some properties, those properties that are really horrible, that could be the best situation. Somebody did ask, should an association foreclose on a unit, do they forfeit the 12 months of back assessments when the lender forecloses? No. This is where you need to contact your attorney. If you owned the unit and the bank takes title, I would contact the attorney to have an assessment of what's due at that point. It depends on, one, who takes title at that mortgage foreclosure sale and the subsequent certificate of title. It also depends on how much rent you've collected. Your rent's first applied to the cost, interest, late fees, attorney's fees, insurance, anything that's accrued on that property, then to assessments, just as the statute states. It applies back there. If there are still delinquent assessments on the property, the bank can owe up to the 12 months or 1% if they're the ones taking title. This is the first mortgagee. It has to be evaluated on a case-by-case basis, though. But I would highly encourage you, should you own title to a property and the bank does take title pursuant to the mortgage foreclosure, have your attorney go over the amounts due before you send out the intent to lien to the bank or their notice, or prepare the estoppel for them to pursue on the property. And that's pretty much my final note is have that evaluated. Don't just give them whatever they ask. Another question we had was the idea of reverse foreclosure, which is kind of what I touched on. It's simply misnamed. Reverse foreclosure is what I touched on a minute ago, where you take title to the unit through the lien foreclosure. In the case that has been presented in the news, the bank has an open mortgage foreclosure, and you come to the bank and offer them title to the property. That's what a mortgage foreclosure is. You basically did the lien foreclosure, and you're offering them title, saying, take it. We want you to take over. You have to take it because you are trying to do exactly the same thing, and we can offer that to you. It'd be like a deed in lieu from an owner, same idea, except that you don't owe the bank the money. The money is secured to the property, not to you as the association. I think that's it.
Okay. On that last point, you know, we've now got case law that Aaron McConnell was talking about, the Little House case, that essentially says that the lender doesn't have any discretion in delaying the sale on its mortgage foreclosure. So if the association has acquired title to the unit via lien foreclosure and the bank is saying, no, we don't want it, you just go forward, and as she said, anyone can force the sale on the bank's foreclosure. They then become the title holder. That's essentially what this reverse foreclosure is all about. You're basically sticking it to the bank, giving them title when they may not necessarily want it. Okay? But I think the important point here is that you can acquire the interest in the unit and you can use that unit. Now, one thing that I mentioned at the beginning was one of the things you want to try to prevent is the trashing of the unit. And this is more, I think, successful, and it's within your ability for condos than it is for HOAs. Because most condo documents say that the owner has an affirmative obligation to maintain the unit, right? So if somebody comes in and starts stripping out the appliances and ripping out copper plumbing, I would suggest to you that's not maintaining the unit. Therefore, if you have information, if you act nosy and get information that someone's planning to destroy the unit and essentially make it uninhabitable, I think you can go in and seek an emergency injunction requiring the owner to leave that equipment, those appliances, in the unit. Okay? And I think in that way, as part of a lien foreclosure action, you can preserve the condition of the unit. Now, when you do acquire title to this, against anybody else in the world, you are the unit owner, subject to the right of some lender to divest you of title. So when you acquire title, do you have to pay the mortgage? No. Okay, you didn't sign the note. So you don't owe the mortgagee anything. When you acquire title, do you have to pay the real estate taxes? No. If you don't want to, if you don't have a long-term plan to keep that unit, then you use that unit and rent it out until such time as somebody acquires superior title, either through a mortgage foreclosure or through a tax deed sale. And that's going to take 2 or 3 years also. So you have the ability to rent this unit out from the time you acquire title until such time as you lose title. If you had, for some reason, you decided you wanted to have a manager's unit or a little love nest or something like that for association members, then certainly go out, get a payoff figure for the mortgage, pay it off, start paying the taxes. But until such time as that occurs, you have the ability to use that unit from the moment you acquire title. Plus, if you do rent it out and the mortgagee eventually comes along and forecloses, federal law that has been in effect for about a year and a half now gives that tenant certain rights when faced with an eviction by a mortgagee who's foreclosing. And frankly, the mortgagees will probably be more delighted and more and happier to take title to a unit knowing there's a paying tenant in there. So what I do is I simply add an addendum to any lease that my clients may enter into saying, hey, this property may be subject to a foreclosure, just so you know, and you have your rights under federal law, and you may well wind up paying your rent to somebody else. Terms of cost, as Aaron said, we want you to go out when you acquire title, get a separate landlord's policy, which is essentially a liability policy, on that unit. You're probably talking somewhere in the range of maybe $1,500 a year. That might be 1 month's rent. So if you rent the unit out for $1,000 a month, probably within 6 months you will have made back all your expenses of your own lien foreclosure, and that would include, obviously, your judgment for unpaid assessments. In another month or two, you will have paid off the insurance, and hopefully, because the unit you prevented the unit from being trashed, you won't have to put any money into the unit to make it rentable. That's where I draw the line. If the unit is become uninhabitable, I don't recommend that you do anything but protect the unit. Don't put it back in a habitable condition because ultimately somebody else is going to benefit without having to pay you back for those expenses. I did get a question here which I think is interesting. If a board refuses to seek the advice of the attorney, or shame on them, because of the expense, which isn't much, what recourse does an association member who's not on the board have to get the attorney to, give advice to protect the association? Well, clearly, the board has a fiduciary responsibility to the other members. And that fiduciary responsibility means you're going to exercise the utmost care in the conduct of the association's affairs. That's what fiduciary means. If you refuse to seek expert advice, you're not complying with your fiduciary responsibility. you therefore are not, as a board member, in a safe harbor. And the owners have a right to demand that you seek appropriate advice, could sue you for breach of fiduciary duty, thereby activating your D&O insurance. The D&O insurance comes in and defends the board, maybe pays off what the association might otherwise have collected, and then proceeds to rape you on premiums for the next 4 or 5 years. The other thing the owner has the ability to do is essentially bring a shareholder's derivative action against the board for breach of fiduciary duty or to attempt to get the association some assistance. I cannot recommend that you be penny wise and pound foolish. Talk to the attorney. If the attorney says this isn't worth pursuing, it hasn't cost you that much money, but it protects you as a board as to whether you've exercised your fiduciary duty. None of you have ever been trained to run a community association. It's that simple. And when you have a fiduciary responsibility, that requires you to not go by the seat of your pants, but to seek expert advice and then act on it as supporting your actions. And so if you don't first get the advice, you couldn't possibly be acting reasonably. So the answer is, please, not just us, consult with your attorney on the facts of the case. The attorney may tell you it's not worth pursuing. Get it in writing, and now you're protected. You're in a safe harbor because you're relying on expert advice. Okay, we have some other questions, and I'm going to look to Ian to come on up and give you some answers to some very sharp questions. And we'll take some more if you've got them. We'll take them now. Otherwise, we'll do a call of hands when Ian's done.
Good morning. Before I start answering some of the questions, in listening to everyone else speak, I thought I'd provide a little bit of perspective from what I've done in the past. Actually, before joining the firm for 14 months, I was a litigation associate with large foreclosure firm in South Florida, not to my knowledge under investigation by the Attorney General's office, fortunately. Sure. I have no problem speaking louder. Actually, people usually tell me to try to lower my voice. From a mortgage foreclosure perspective, between the bank and the borrower, it's not a question generally of who's going to end up being the person that gets the judgment at the end of the day. Winning and losing is all about time. And I think that's relevant to what we're talking about here today, because when a foreclosure case is defended, and we started with that a little bit, there's your uncontested foreclosure where no one's defending, flat fee, it's flying through. You have contested cases. And from my firm's perspective, and I believe their fee structure, the association filing a vanilla, if you will, appearance and defenses didn't take it off the cookie-cutter conveyor belt, so to speak. However, foreclosure firms are on what's called timelines where they're graded against other firms on how quickly they move the case along, at least until the time of judgment. Of course, once the judgment happens, especially recently, you have the banks not wanting the case to go to sale, but then you're off the hook because you're taking instructions from your client and you're not on that timeline. Basically, the point I'm trying to make is where a case is defended and it's contested, several firms in the state that know the game and make a lot of money at it, several defense firms actually charge the unit owner a monthly fee every month they keep them in the property. Now, they may have fancy language, so you're basically not being paid to use dilatory tactics, but they get paid every month these people are in the property. With that said, when they're fighting all about time, the association has a unique opportunity, if they're proactive, and I think that's been echoed by what other people have said already this morning, to be proactive and aggressive, because if someone wants to stay in their house, and let's say they're not making their $2,000 a month mortgage payment, but they are paying their attorney $500 a month for the privilege not to have to make that payment, if push comes to shove, they're going to pay the association. As long as the arrearage hasn't gotten out of hand, they want to stay in the house. They're paying a quarter of their mortgage payment, maybe less. If the association is aggressive, they will pay to stay, basically. So whatever an association can do to really push things along, and I'm talking about those contested cases again, if you get on top of it to begin with, if they can pay pennies to stay in their house indefinitely, they're not going to want to be kicked out because of their association. So please keep that in mind. Now I'll go through some of the questions. This is already answered, but I don't want the person feeling that I'm ignoring the question. We spoke about the no record activity. And, you know, basically at 10 months, as Aaron said, we can initiate things. And then if there's no record activity within 60 days, the case is dismissed. As from a bank standpoint, I'm going to do a notice of filing, some document, maybe advise the court I'm on vacation in the month of April. It's very easy to make record activity. The change in the rule, which happened a few years ago, it used to be if there was no record activity and you didn't keep track of things, the case was dismissed or could be dismissed absent of showing a good of good cause, but it was already after the fact. Now all you have to do is file a bare-bones pleading once every 10 months or so, and you can avoid that. But with that said, by forcing the issue and possibly demanding a case management conference or something else, it gets on the judge's radar, and the judge may be proactively deciding at that point to push things along. Can association recover costs incurred while unit is in foreclosure? If so, how? I think that's been discussed generally. In this case, they're talking about a squatter and $5,000 in what I assume are legal fees to get the people out, and the foreclosure has been going on over 3 years. When I saw this, my question was, why 3 years? And maybe I'm drawing some inferences. I'm assuming a squatter isn't a tenant and isn't the unit owner. If you have counsel pushing your lien foreclosure, this should not happen. So you shouldn't be in that position to begin with. It is outrageous, absent something like a bankruptcy or some other stay situation, that a mortgage foreclosure should be going on 3 years. I can't see here if the case is being defended, defense counsel's making a lot of money on this case, and if you have aggressive counsel on your side, that should not ever happen. How should a tenant in a foreclosed unit determine how to purchase the unit from a foreclosing institution? That's really a out of left field topic, but basically contact plaintiff's counsel and try to get a contact person. The bank isn't going to deal with you or anyone else until they take title. I have seen situations where people were deeded the property post-foreclosure, so they were at least the title holder, and they wanted to basically assume the bank's position. Even then, the bank, it wasn't what the bank was used to, and it was very difficult to get the parties together.
Better to get the association to sell it, sell the tenant to the association.
An option might be, but however, you have a situation here, and Paul raised a good point. If the tenant is that interested in the property, and the association is foreclosing its lien, if they want to take title, they can buy the association's interest or buy the unit from the association and then deal with the lender. And if, at that point, they are the title holder and not just the tenant. And if they truly want to purchase the property from the lender isn't going to work out a new loan with them. But if they want to buy out the first mortgage, they're the owner. As the owner, they have the right to do that, and they're entitled to payoff figures. Can a lender or condo association go after all or any of the assets of the mortgagee, and if so, to what extent? Can condo association...
Should be mortgagor.
Yes. That's correct. It should be mortgagor. It says mortgagee. Can condo association take less money from new owner if they are third party? I'll answer the last question first. Yes, but why? It depends how they're a third party. If they were assigned the bid, no reason to take a penny less. Lenders, and we haven't seen this wave yet, but we will. Lenders have been focused on taking title and marketing the properties. But lenders can still sue for the principal balance of what would have been due on the note, less what they received in selling the property minus their cost. And then it's called a deficiency judgment. Most foreclosure final judgments reserved for that. And that's a subsequent action arising out of any losses the lender has after marketing the property and selling it. The association can also go after the unit owner. Florida has various laws regarding what assets are exempt. Homestead property shouldn't be an issue, obviously, because you have lien rights. But we're assuming you no longer have homestead. There's the head of the household exemption as far as garnishment of wages. It's really a whole other topic of law. But yes, you basically, a secured lien holder, whether it be a mortgage holder or an association, has in rem relief and in personam relief. In rem relief is the property itself. In personam is relief, monetary relief by way of a judgment against the person. So you have the ability to collect what you didn't get, either because the first mortgage wiped you out, absent your what you're entitled to by statute, to still go after the unit owner. But I would be more focused on, unless you should be more focused on pushing the envelope as far as your lien rights, so that you don't have to be in that situation, because that's usually a loser. Very tough to collect from people personally, especially if they're in that situation to begin with. What are the benefits and negatives of our condo association foreclosing and taking possession of units in long-term foreclosures? The benefits, I think, we've gone over indefinite rental income. Indefinite. At that point, if there's a long-term mortgage foreclosure and you're entitled, let them work it out. If the lender, for whatever reason, maybe inherited a David Stern file, and they're not sure that they can even continue with the foreclosure, the longer you're renting it out, who cares? It's rental income. There's no negative to this that I see. The only negative I could see is if you didn't insure the unit you were renting and there was some claim. But if you insure the unit, it's rental income. After a few months, the cost of foreclosure and other attendant costs should be paid off, and then it's an indefinite income stream.
Okay.
One more. How can a foreclosure after 2 years be dismissed or withdrawn and we are still not receiving payment? The owner is still living. What can we do? I think I actually started out with the time game. I would say in that case, the unit owner is winning. You can do what you could have done 2 years ago and get your association council involved to actively pursue your lien rights, in which case, for all we know, the unit owner would still be where they are today, but you'd be getting your assessments paid. That's all the questions I have. Thank you.
Yeah, the case that he's just talked about, 2 years and we're still not getting anything, and the original one, which we got a squatter in there, those things only happen if you don't exercise your rights. If you sit on it, that's what's going to happen. If you start immediately, first of all, as was said, you're going to increase your chances of getting paid by minimizing the amount you're trying to collect. But beyond that, if you're not going to collect, and we're not magicians, I always say this when I do this kind of a speech, I'm not a magician. I can't make an owner pay. I can only force the owner to look themselves in the mirror and answer one of two questions. Do I want to keep the unit? Am I able to keep the unit? If the answer to those questions is yes, you will get paid. If the answer to one of those questions is no, you will not get paid. But if you don't take any action, they will sit in the unit, and you will get a worse situation. So by starting your action, you acquire the unit, you get the chance to either rent it out indefinitely or even sell your interest to a tenant or to anybody else. I mean, let's supposing it cost you $3,000 to acquire title. There's not beyond the realm of possibility that you hold an auction, you sell your interest for $4,000 to somebody who drew the lucky ticket, and that person then gets to rent the unit out and collect the rent indefinitely. So you get paid. I mean, there's all sorts of things you do, but you don't get there if you don't start the process. Plus, as Aaron has discussed, you have more rights to force the lender to complete their foreclosure or to cram the sale down on them or to require them to pay or to reverse foreclosure, make them take title, only if you have taken action to acquire title. So these real horror stories about squatters and where a guy's been sitting in there for 2 years, simply because you're your own worst enemy. You haven't taken action. Which leads me to one of the questions that I've got here. As a board member, how much of all these regulations is our responsibility, and how much is the responsibility of the law firm representing our association once we become aware of a problem with the unit owner? Well, the fact that you're aware of a problem doesn't mean the lawyer is, right? Okay, I mean, I don't get these signals coming through the sky. I don't put on my little tinfoil hat. It's a partnership. I need to work with you, but you need to work with me. You don't just turn it over to me and say, go do your thing. We need to be consulting all the way. Here's where we are. What has changed? What's the owner doing? Who's in the unit? All that stuff. It's a partnership. We both have to work at this to get it done. Okay? It is neither the associations completely nor the law firms completely. It is both. Okay, did you expect me to say anything different? Okay, this is a good one. This is a good one. From a homeowner's perspective, this would be an HOA. In a single-family home, is it better to short sale or let the foreclosure go through if the difference between the short sale and the mortgage is in the price in the mortgage to $300,000 to $400,000 range? I don't think the range really doesn't make a difference. The question is, should you accept less when there's a short sale situation, or should you stick up your nose and say, pay me in full, and if you don't pay me, go foreclose? I tend to take a hard approach on this, but before I take that hard approach, I want to see one crucial piece of information. I want to see the settlement sheet, the proposed settlement sheet. I want to know who's getting what. If I get a settlement sheet and I see that there's a broker's commission and it's being paid in full, go foreclose. You know, I'm not taking the hit on this, and by this I mean my client. The bank is going to be taking less. That's the definition of a short sale. But unless the brokers are taking less too, I'm not cutting my position. And if we're going to cut, we're all going to cut basically in the same percentage. And if you don't like it, go foreclose or go file bankruptcy. Okay? Well, you're not hurting yourself either way, because you're going to wind up getting something. But if they're going to play the association for Patsy, make them work, okay? Or make them show that everybody's sharing the pain. Okay, with regard to evictions, what is the legal right of an association to evict tenants that are not desirable, i.e. destructive, not adhering to the rules, and or no fees being received by the association? A board member was told by an attorney that you cannot evict unless major damage or illegal activity is evident. First of all, this isn't quite relevant to foreclosures, but we're assuming here a situation where there is no delinquency for the moment and you've just got a bad tenant. The answer is your pressure point is against the unit owner. Unless your documents specifically allow you the right to evict somebody else's tenant, you don't have that right. And I wouldn't exercise it anyway, because any defenses that the tenant may have against the unit owner, they would have against you. And now you're spending the money to get rid of somebody else's tenant. What you want to do is you want to take legal action against the unit owner. He's ultimately responsible for the conduct of the tenant, so make him spend the money to defend himself and justify the tenant's conduct. It doesn't have to be a major violation. It just has to be a material violation. And in that situation, the landlord's now going to be in a position of having to spend money to either justify his tenant's position, or he's better off, he's just going to get rid of the tenant and get somebody else in there. So your pressure point is the owner. You don't go to evict the tenant. With regard to non-payment situation, and now you're making, for example, a demand for payment of the current and future assessments from the tenant, and they don't pay you, that situation is you have the ability to evict under the statute, but the owner does not have the ability to evict if you are being paid. So my feeling is I wouldn't spend the money in that situation. I might make noise about evicting the tenant, but I don't know that I would actually want you to spend the money in that situation. Now, I think that's it for written. No, we have more written questions? Okay, well, Aaron, you want to come up and take some more?
Okay, and before I do these two questions, I'm going to mention something that I forgot I wanted to touch on. When you, as an association, become aware of a new person who is living in a unit that was in foreclosure, let your attorney know, because other than searching the public records and searching the property records every time we look at the case, we are unaware if there's a warranty deed that's issued during this mortgage foreclosure. And believe me, it will take months for the banks to reflect that in their own cases as well. Just because there's a short sale that occurs or a warranty deed that occurs does not mean an automatic dismissal of their case. In their minds, sometimes it does, but from my perspective as another defendant who is unaware of what's going on, to me it simply looks like one of those times where they're not responding back to me and telling me that the property has been sold. So you, as my client, it's important that you tell me everything that you know that's going on about that property, because if I am looking at the status of it every 30 to 60 days and it was sold 3 months ago, then I'm not going to be aware of that. And unfortunately, I will have billed you for my time of looking at those statuses and trying to see what's going on in the mortgage foreclosure. And we'll both be frustrated because the other one didn't know what was going on. So the best thing to do is when you know of any property transfer, let your attorney know so that you can get taken care of the new collections, any estoppel that has to be done for that short sale, and you can also stop any other actions that they have, whether it's collections or mortgage foreclosure, against that previous owner, unless you're seeking something of a personal judgment in the collection. Now, the question that I have, we have a unit that is now held by Fannie Mae since October. What can be done to collect our maintenance fees? Again, contact your attorney, because since it's Fannie Mae that's listed on here, there's a possibility that they were a third-party purchaser and did not hold the original mortgage. So there is a possibility that even though they may be asking you for 12 months or 1%, that you are entitled to ask them for payment of all assessments. But get on that right away, because as a bank, there is nothing standing between you getting that property other than them making those payments so that they can keep it. If they're not paying current assessments, you start the collection action against them as well. That's what we're saying, is go forward, start your collection action immediately, start with your 30-day intent to lien letter, proceed with a lien, the intent to foreclose letter, and the foreclosure. Make sure that you do not delay when these properties are transferred to a bank or to Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. The other question is, we have another owner who's apparently paying his mortgage but hasn't paid his maintenance fees in 7 months. This could go on forever. What are our options? Collect. Start your collection action now. Being 7 months away, I don't know in terms of if it's a monthly or quarterly and how big your assessments are, but 7 months in some associations could mean over $1,000. And like Aaron touched on before, a lot of us will keep a nest egg of emergency money that we can handle, but if it starts getting outside the realm of $1,000, that's more than some people can afford. They may be using all of what they've got to pay their mortgage, because many times owners don't understand that the association has the ability to take away their property. They look at this as just being dues. They don't think of it as being an interest that's attached directly to their property that can be taken away. So that's why they may be looking at the mortgagee as having a higher interest, and they're shortchanging the association. So make sure you move forward on those, because again, if there's no mortgage foreclosure at this point, if the association can take title, if the owner says, I really can't afford to pay this, then the association can take title, and you've already got a jump on the bank as far as being able to rent it out. Or if the owner decides that they can find that emergency money, they'll bring the account current. Now, the final question is, if a unit was in foreclosure before July 1st, 2010, and the lender took title after July 1st, 2010, how many months in back assessments can the association collect? This is your story problem for the day. So looking at the statute, we know we had the change on July 1st, 2010 that changed it from 6 months to 12 months. Now what we go by is the date that the CT was issued. Because, and it gets a little tricky if the sale and CT, if there was some sort of big discrepancy there. But to me, anybody who voluntarily took that property after the change in statute, they were aware of the changes that went into the statute. So they were aware that their liability was going to change on July 1st, 2010. And the banks, this becomes, if you look at your documents too, many of them will have language that, that we call it Kaufman language that automatically applies changes to the statute and they become automatically part of your declaration. So in that way too, under your declaration, they are taking it with knowledge that this change has taken place in the statute. Now, like I said, if the sale was before July 1st and the title was just after, then contact your attorney to see what exactly, especially if there was a large gap of time for whatever reason. But I would say that the safe bet is any CT or title transfer that took place after July 1st, 2010, go for the full 12 months or 1%.
Actually, the trick answer on that is 1%. That's the right answer. Because it's the lesser of 6 months or 1%, the lesser of 12 months or 1%. I'll bet you dollars to donuts, the lesser of both of those is 1%. And so that's the number you're going to get. And that's why there was absolutely no discussion about changing that number from 6 months to 12 months for condos. The banks just laughed and said, hey, it's always going to be 1%. So we didn't give anything up. That's the trick answer on that one. And the other one, the question about the 7 months, again, folks, why are you waiting on this? Why are you waiting? Because now that this person owes you a substantial chunk of change, when you start taking action, as Aaron suggests, what are they going to start doing? They're going to stop paying the mortgage. So this will precipitate, your action will precipitate a mortgage foreclosure. If you had taken action initially, they would have looked themselves in the mirror, asked themselves those questions, and you either would have been way ahead of the mortgagee rather than starting out at roughly the same time, or you would have been paid. Don't delay. Aaron.
More questions. I think today's two themes now are a combination of don't wait and communication. Communication is key in both the mortgage foreclosures, lien foreclosures. Generally, I know speaking for Aaron and I, if we're not doing a legal analysis for you, we're not charging you. So call us, let us know, send us an email. That's even better because then we can skip over it and find out the information quickly. But don't just leave the attorney out of the loop. Not everything is charged for. The questions I have are, if the association takes title, do we assume the debt/mortgage and have to pay those mortgages? No, definitely not. The mortgage is secured to the property, but you are not obligated to pay that. If you wanted to keep the property forever, yes, you would have to pay it off. But you're not obligated as the title holder. That relationship's between the mortgagor and the mortgagee, not the association. The next one's related to bankruptcy. This is where a tenant was paying rent to the association, I assume pursuant to the demand for rent outside of the lien foreclosure that was just enacted July 1st, and they were paying, but the bankruptcy court ordered them to stop. It says, now that the bankruptcy has been granted, I'm going to make the assumption that it's a discharge, that how do we go about collecting the rent? The assessments are secured to the property, so basically send out another demand letter to the tenant, and you can proceed the same way that you would have proceeded prior to that. During the bankruptcy, you cannot suspend rights, you cannot demand rents, nothing that would be a collection of that debt. But afterwards, then you're back again to that same place. Then the next question is, what action can be taken if the owner is delinquent in assessment and the tenant is told to pay the rent to the association but fails to do so? This, I'm also assuming, is pursuant to the demand for rent for the new part of the statute and on July 1st. The statute does provide for an eviction pursuant to the landlord-tenant part of the statute. However, we do not recommend that remedy. Like Paul said, you can throw it out there. It can be as part of the letter that the remedy is there. However, we feel it puts the association in a position that they could possibly be forced to litigate and defend themselves for that eviction and is not worth it. Pursue your other avenue, the lien foreclosure, and obtain the rents through that, and that way you can obtain the rents with a court order, and the judge has the power to enforce whatever remedies he feels are best, and it doesn't put the association at risk.
Now, let me ask, just by show of hands, how many of you have questions that you want to ask us by hand? Anybody? Because we're right at the end of the tape, and it doesn't look like we have many, so I'll just say let's call it at this, and we'll just do the rest of it untaped, okay? All right, so you're going to stop now? Okay, good. All right. He needs to say to me, they need to ask me a question in order to get good information. Yeah, okay. We're still here, and thank you so much for attending and for your attention.
Can I have your attention just for a few moments, please? Paul will be here for a little while. Anybody who is interested in the copy of the DVD, there'll be $20. You can send it to the Space Coast Post Office box. Will the committee that was counting the ballots for the amendment please give us your report? 155 to pass the amendment, 3 no. Thank you, everybody, for putting in your ballots and helping us take care of that. I greatly appreciate it. Our next meeting will be February 19th. It will be on what to do if you have to go to court. It'll be a mock trial here, very interactive. It should be very interesting. Thank you all for coming. There'll be a board meeting immediately after.